Hello and welcome to Brain Trust Live number 200.
This week on the podcast, guys, it's our 200th episode. Celebrate us.
Ted Cruz is unable to get the ball through the basketball ring in Indiana or get individuals to vote for him.
Donald Trump is currently feuding with an estimated 56% of the Republican Party and is also now using to canter as a verb.
Conventional wisdom says that 2016 is Clinton in a landslide. But when has she ever let conventional wisdom determine her fate?
Plus, delegate allocation on both sides of the aisle forces us to wonder, will there ever be final results in this crazy primary?
And Donald Trump enacts part one of his genius Latino outreach strategy. Eat a tostada bowl on Cinco de Mayo.
We'll have all this and more.
This is Brain Trust Live.
Number 200.
Hey guys, I'm Brent.
I'm Lila, and you can find us on the web at www.braintrustlive.com.
That's right.
I don't know if you've heard, but it's our 200th episode.
I know. Who would have ever thought?
Who would have thought?
No one.
A mere 4 years ago.
I know.
That we would still be recording this ridiculous podcast.
Yeah, but we are.
But we are.
And your lives are better for it.
Your lives are better for it. We're still sitting in my living room just talking about politics for an hour every week.
Uh-huh.
Who would have guessed that we would have two amazing primaries to cover in the life of this podcast?
I know.
You know, we started this podcast because we were having an amazing primary.
Yes.
The first Funny Farm clown car primary.
Exactly.
2012.
We
were like, we should record a podcast.
That's right.
This seems like nothing this amazing will ever happen again.
Yeah.
And here we are. It's something that amazing happen again. Something
sure
more
did.
Amazing happened.
More. Much
I don't
more.
Even know what to do with the amount of amazingness that we've gotten to cover on this podcast.
I know.
We're lucky people.
We are. We really are.
But in any case, we had, in honor of our 200th episode, one of the greater weeks of the 2016
Seriously.
Primary cycle.
It was like a
Who
gift.
Would have known? I mean, they knew. Someone knew. They had to know.
Yeah.
The Indiana primary turned out not to be the snore that it usually is.
Right.
It was decisive
it
for
never
once in
gets,
its life.
It never means anything. And
it's never meant anything once.
And we knew that it was going to be hotly contested, or supposedly anyway.
But that's what
this
every
was
primary
the,
has been.
Right.
So
but this was
we didn't
like,
know to
this
know.
Was the time, this was, we knew going into this that this was supposedly like the potentially the last hurrah for the Never Trump folks, because
right.
like this was,
well,
the,
this
was the one-on-one that Ted Cruz had been itching for months.
Right.
He finally got what he was
him
wished
for.
Him and
Kasich entered Kasich, into their quote-unquote hapless
plan. We talked about that dumb
plan.
Hapless plan last week. And so this was it. And Ted Cruz was making his last stand.
That's right.
And it was a shitty last stand.
He took a stand at 36.7%.
Oh,
Donald Trump, unfortunately,
over
took a
50.
Better stand at 53.3%.
Yeah.
And John Kasich came in at 7.5%.
Yeah.
Other came in at 2.5%.
Yeah.
John Kasich, only 5 points up from other.
Yeah.
That's
granted,
never a good sign.
Granted, he was not technically running. I mean,
right.
he was on the ballot.
He was on the ballot. He was supposed to shift his support to Cruz as part of their quote-unquote hapless plan. That's
right.
The LA Times word, not ours, but it is perfect.
Yeah.
So we're going to use it forever.
Yeah.
But he also failed to ever explicitly come in on the Cruz side. Like, he got asked whether this meant his supporters should vote
he
for
never
Cruz.
Told
and he was like,
to vote for
well,
Cruz.
I'm not going to say don't vote for me.
Yeah.
So I don't know. He was technically running because
he was
running and
correct.
He was telling his supporters to vote for him and not Cruz.
Yeah. Exactly.
On the Democratic side, we saw a Sanders victory again.
Yeah, which was
back in the saddle. It was unexpected. He was down, I think, 5 points last week when we spoke.
Yeah.
I like that I say, like, when we last spoke.
Right.
Like, we just gather to let people listen to us casually speak about politics for a week. But he came in at 52.7%. Hillary Clinton at 47.3%. So that was actually a surprising and pretty
decisive.
Pretty decisive victory.
Yeah.
And I mean, moving forward, the rest of this month is Sanders.
It's
I know
it
that
totally
he was
is.
Supposed to be dead and buried by now. He's not mathematically eliminated. He will not
He's
be
not.
Till the final day of voting. That's an interesting thing that only the Democrats can say.
That's true. Yeah.
And he also he's going to start having momentum again, guys.
I know.
And I know,
he
you
is.
Know, he's almost 300 points behind, 300 delegates behind. Yeah. It's going to be difficult for him
it's
to
hard.
Keep up.
He's got to get like 66% of the remaining delegates.
Right,
which
is not going to happen.
We but, get it. But fuck math.
But fuck math. It's
Who
sort
needs
of fun.
It? I always hated math.
I was, and also, this is, if we're going to let large states vote last, we should make it so that nothing can be decisive until they vote.
Yes.
California is still going to get the final say in what happens
here.
Yeah,
he's going to make a play
because
here.
He's going to make a play in California, and we have enough delegates that he could win. If he won enough of California, he could surpass her again. It's not going to happen, I don't think, but we can dream, you guys.
That's right.
That's the beauty of the Democratic primary. Yeah. It's not.
You don't have to listen to Hillary Clinton and stop dreaming.
No, you can
dream. She wants you to stop dreaming, but you don't have to.
You can dream as much as you as dream your big, little guys. Heart desires.
If you dream big enough, you can shoot for the moon and land amongst the stars or some bullshit.
Some bullshit like that.
It doesn't
like
make
that.
Any sense due to science.
No.
But whatever.
Whatever.
That's what we're doing,
the
guys.
The stars are many of them beyond the moon.
All
of them. Yeah, matter all of fact. Them are beyond the moon.
That's right.
The moon is just the closest of many random things in the sky that are flying around us at all times.
That's right.
I know science.
I was just about to say.
In any case, before Wisconsin, Trump had never hit 50%. And the big criticism of him then was he'll never be able to get an actual victory in the Republican primary because he's getting like 30 and 40% of the vote and just winning because there's like a million people running.
Right.
Then...
lo and behold, New
York
happened.
He hit seven
happened.
States straight.
And then the rest of
with
those,
over 50%, right. And everyone else went away. Because we're going to talk more in depth about it in a second.
Is weird
but
how
Cruz
this...
and Kasich have dropped out.
Yes.
And they were surprise dropouts. I didn't think they were going to happen.
No.
So when they happened, I was like, guys, did we know? What's happening?
No,
how
I
do
know.
I know what to know about what's happening?
I know.
Things, unexpected things like this rarely happen in the primary. Brent and I usually, because we've been paying such close attention, have a sense of when people are and are not going to drop
right.
out of the race, when their kind of final moment in the sun is going to
yeah.
be. And this was, I thought that like Sanders, they were just going to sort of commit to the long haul because what other
right.
plan did
like,
they have?
Yeah, exactly. Like just... hang around and be the person sort of like left holding the bag when
yeah.
something happens either at
Donald
the convention
Trump.
Or even if he does end up with the
but
most delegates.
But here's what
like
I now
you know,
think. I have a conspiracy theory. It's okay. not that conspiracy-esque, but it's theorizing for sure. I think that the hapless plan that was the agreement that Kasich and Cruz struck was actually just if one of us can't win Indiana, we have to drop out. I think it was a dropout pact. I don't think that it was... I think it was because neither of them were going to drop out if neither of them dropped out.
Right.
I think that their hapless plan maybe... I think
that
their plan...
was a part of the
yeah,
plan.
I think they knew that this was going to happen and that they both needed an out. And I think that they were like, if we can't prove that we're useful in Indiana, that's
right.
our moment and let's both leave.
Yeah, I could see that.
Because,
yeah,
you know, the
that.
Map wasn't looking good moving forward for Cruz, but it was looking... fairly okay for Kasich in
for
logic
Kasich. In this
in logic world.
In the sense that Kasich has still only won one primary.
But
that
that's
was
the
his
problem.
Home
he
state.
Had fewer delegates than Marco
than Marco Rubio,
Rubio
who dropped out
who,
in the middle
ago.
Of March.
Yeah. I mean, so this is I think that that pact was more about dropping out than it was about staying.
Could have been.
And
I'll buy that.
I don't blame him. Shit was looking pretty desperate.
Yeah, it was.
And once it yeah. became clear that Trump was going to hit 50% of the delegates, it was like, why are we still
yeah.
doing this?
Well, that's true. Yeah, exactly.
I don't think that voters in California deserved a choice, too. I never support anyone dropping out of a race before the fat
right.
lady has sung.
Yeah,
you know,
I agree.
But I mean, I support Ted Cruz dropping out of almost any race.
Yeah.
So.
Well, I thought it was really interesting this week, too, because Hillary was asked about that. Because, of course, there have been... a few more calls
for Sanders
Bernie
to
drop out. And she said that she empathized with him. And she was like, I did the same thing in 2008.
Yeah.
She goes, people forget that I won 9 out of the last 12 primaries.
Exactly.
Because she sort of had this whole winning streak at the end.
And
then finally, it was when the math was bad. It was appeared that she was behind. And so she dropped out. But... you know, you're not, it makes it really hard for her to tell him to drop out. And she hasn't.
She hasn't.
To her,
she knows. Also, I think she must on some level know that this is making her a stronger candidate and keeping the base engaged to the end. She needs that. These voters are not natural Clinton voters.
And
these Sanders people need to be engaged to the end so that there is a moment for him to transition.
And in all of these.
Sort of hand her the baton.
Exactly. And in all of these exit polls, they ask the Democrats, well, they ask the Republicans too, but they ask, has the primary energized the party or has the primary, you know, torn the party apart? And overwhelming, like
Democrats
70, 80, 90%, the Democrats are saying that it's energized the party. And that's because that they have two candidates that generally people like.
Yeah.
I don't like both of them, but
that's an exciting time for the party.
So
we have at least one candidate that people like. The Democrat, the Republicans don't have any candidates that people
exactly.
like, so that's the danger that they're facing.
Yes.
But so the Indiana primary was interesting because Indiana is sort of like a Rust Belt-y state.
Totally.
And because of that, the primary was heavily influenced by unions. And some unions came out in favor of Trump.
Fascinating.
Or union leadership came out
in favor
of Trump.
Remember when we were talking about this 6 months ago?
You guys.
Because
he's against the TPP. He talks about jobs getting moved abroad.
Totally.
It makes sense that these unions
already,
are supporting him.
He
supporting
has spent
him.
The last half of this week ragging on her about NAFTA.
Exactly.
I mean,
no, but so what this meant, the reason that Sanders in this kind of state, Sanders and Trump are sort of interesting bedfellows because they, the people, the union people who didn't vote for Trump there, and there were many union people who individually were interviewed and said, I could never,
right.
But they all voted for Sanders because Sanders is the other union right. candidate in the race.
Yeah.
If you are a sort of like Rust Belt Republican, then Trump was who you voted for. If you're a Rust Belt Democrat, Sanders is who you voted for. But if you're in a union state, and you're in a state where there, and that's, I think, what happened with Sanders is there were some decisive, I think that unions in endorsing Trump energized Sanders union voters
union people,
to get out there.
I think you're probably right.
I think that that meant that the kind of voters that were being told to go to the polls were the kind of voters that were naturally going to gravitate towards Sanders because not all of them were going to be idiot enough to vote for Trump. And so, I mean, it was, I think, an interesting look at where, like, at where sort of like Sanders and Trump are showing that there's sort of like widespread discontent with certain policies
yes.
that the establishment wings of both parties represent.
Both parties. Yep.
And
exactly.
and you can sort of see where a lot of this Trump support is coming from. Because I know that I keep talking to people in California who are like, I don't get what's happening. And I keep being like, it is so easy to get what's happening.
Yeah.
It's not hard to understand where the Trump support came from.
Yep.
It's hard to understand why a bigoted, you know, asshole like Trump
right.
was the person who harnessed this and no professional politician thought to.
Yep.
But I get where the Trump support is coming from. I don't think it's coming from a smart place.
No,
but it's coming from a fearful place of people who are in a shitty situation. And that is what you're seeing
and
in these Rust Belt states.
And these
you know?
Are the, when you listen to any of the pundits talk about how he might possibly win in the general, this is what they talk about.
Yeah.
Because they're talking about, you know, he's going to make a play for Pennsylvania,
mm-hmm.
which Democrats win in every single,
yeah.
you know. And
he's going to make a play for some traditionally, yeah.
But he, you know,
for some traditional Democratic states.
He's going to play in Ohio, which is a huge swing state, as
yep.
we know. He's going to play in some of these
Rust Belt
states.
And our problem is we're not going to have a candidate who can say that they're strongly against some of these free trade
exactly.
agreements that are motivating this support.
Exactly.
You know, and these are the same voters. This is all fear voting. So you are afraid of your job being shipped abroad, but you're
yeah.
also afraid of someone coming and taking your job for less money.
Yeah.
That's what the immigration fear is
totally.
All about. These are not people who have experience knowing what living in a diverse, wonderful city is about.
That's right.
Like many of us who live on the coasts or live in major cities, like can't understand what this fear of immigration is about because it seems
yeah.
insane because everyone in the world that we interact with is sort of like connected to immigration in some way.
Yeah.
But if you live in a state where that's not been your experience, it sounds scary when someone tells you your job is going to be given to someone who is willing to work at a lower rate because they're an immigrant. Like
yep.
that's not logic, but they don't know better than to know that. That's what
yep.
they've been told. Like
yeah.
so you can see where these policies overlap, where these sort of
totally.
Like protectionist policies overlap with this bigoted sentiment that you're seeing coming out of Trump's campaign.
Yeah.
So like it's not shocking what's happening
it's
here.
It's not shocking. No.
Those voters could very easily go Sanders too. I mean there's
yeah.
it's because the motivating issue
yeah.
here is the economy.
Not if he's not the general election candidate.
But not if he's not the general election candidate. In any case, there was also another funny thing that happened in the Indiana primary
yeah,
day.
The actual voting took place on a very interesting day in the campaign
yes.
because it happened that morning. Donald Trump implied that Ted Cruz's father was in on the JFK assassination. It's a family of killers.
It's a National Enquirer story.
Because Ted Cruz is the Zodiac killer.
Yeah, he's
remember?
The Zodiac killer. Yes.
Yeah.
I know I saw a photo of him that was about him leaving the race, and it had the letters for Zodiac killer circled, and they were all in a row for whatever the headline was, and it was
yeah.
like proof.
Yeah. But yeah, there was this National Enquirer story that had, they claimed Ted Cruz's father, Raphael, was pictured with Lee Harvey Oswald handing out pro-Fidel Castro pamphlets in New Orleans in 1963, like... So he's somehow associated with Lee
First
Harvey
of
Oswald,
all,
therefore plotted to kill JFK.
He didn't leave Cuba to hand out pro-Fidel pamphlets in New Orleans. That's not a real thing that happened. I know that he was sort of vaguely associated with the revolution. No one can actually figure out how because
right.
there's no evidence that he
right.
did anything other than maybe attend a few rallies.
Right. He's obviously not talking
and
about it
And he's not talking
days.
About it now. But I mean, it's like a hilarious story even beyond the joke of it just being
yeah.
a joke because there's like no world in which in 1963 you leave Cuba and then hand out pro-Fidel literature in New Orleans.
Yeah. But Cruz responded with like his most insane attacks on Trump. Yeah,
he took real offense.
And it could have been, he took real offense, but I also think on some level he might have, you know, He knew in 12 hours
he was just
a concession
like,
speech.
I'm going to say everything I've wanted
right,
to say
exactly.
this whole time.
Because he called Trump a pathological liar, a narcissist. He said that he was proud of being a serial philanderer.
I mean
Trump,
he
really
to be fair,
went,
is
like,
proud of being a serial philanderer.
But like that was the most sort of like all in, in terms of at least personal attacks that Cruz had gone on Trump. So that was sort of like, just the day of that primary was fascinating.
An amazing
before
day.
Anybody even dropped out.
Yeah.
It was crazy.
And before anyone really voted. I mean, this was before we had any results to even talk about.
It was, yeah.
When Cruz finally did drop out, first of all, people were screaming no in the audience. No one expected it. It was a very unexpected thing.
We sort of had reports at that point, like, I think, like, the news agencies were being, like, report Ted Cruz to drop out of the race, probably because they had, like, heard from somebody in the campaign or something like that.
Yeah.
But it was basically as he was coming out on stage that we knew
it
this.
It was
so, like,
his
nobody in the audience knew that this was going to happen.
He promised us he would continue to fight for liberty.
Oh, good.
Thank God.
Thank God.
His fight for liberty is what keeps me up at night.
Yes, exactly.
Well, lets me sleep at night. And then I was like, that's not it.
Were right the first time. Yeah.
He was the first major candidate to announce that he ran. We'd forgotten about that.
Yeah.
So he, I think, can safely blame himself for Donald Trump being the only man left standing.
Yeah,
because
I mean,
he's the one person who wasn't going to be able to get enough support from the party to beat this guy.
He was truly the only person out of the 17. I mean, the Never Trump people could have more quickly coalesced behind Jim Gilmore than they
or
George Pataki,
George Pataki
than they could have Ted Cruz. Yeah. Because Ted Cruz was, of the 17, easily the absolute worst person to have to try and get leaders of a party to try and get behind to take somebody down.
I would contend, based on just hearsay, that he is the least liked person in government.
Yeah. Well, and also, in my notes that I was taking here, I also said that he had the most punchable face in politics, too, which I stand by.
Yes, which is a factual report of what's happened.
Yeah. But, I mean, truly, any other human being might have been able to get this done.
Pataki could have, and he's pro-life. I mean, Chris Christie could have, and he's, like, an actual buffoon.
Totally.
It
makes you question some of the other people dropping out when they did.
I know.
And we question all those people dropping out
when
they did, too.
Aside from Jim Gilmore.
But, I mean, I think for a lot of them, it had to do with money, as we know.
For most of them. I mean, that's what Scott Walker was about. Scott Walker,
Scott Walker.
He had an early surge, but who was to say that he couldn't come back from that?
Right, exactly.
It was, like, way back in...
I mean, Scott Walker is a person that the right could have...
They could have easily coalesced around him. He's anti-union. He's an asshole.
Yep.
He's got a mysterious bald spot that he won't explain in the factual...
Because right, he hit his head when he was a child?
Yeah. Let me tell you what happened is he got male pattern baldness and won't talk about it. I refuse to believe that he hit his head and that's why he has a bald spot in the exact spot that male pattern baldness strikes.
Not a thing. That's what a man who didn't finish college would tell you.
Yeah. I had forgotten. That was his big... That was why he was never going to be president. I remember having a discussion with my mom when he first became sort of like the next big thing in the presidential race. And I was like, to what degree do you have to have finished college to be the president? And I was like, I would contend that it's to the 100th degree. Like, I would contend that, like, that's the degree to which you, like, that's the moment. That's the thing.
It's the cutoff. That's
it's
like
the cutoff.
That's the
You have to have a bachelor's degree. Have to have done. I hope you have a master's. Right. I don't, though, so who am I to judge?
That's true.
Like, but I mean, I would contend you have to have a bachelor's.
Just finish something.
Like, go back to school and finish your fucking degree.
Yeah.
Anyways.
John Kasich.
Also dropped out because the Lord has a plan for him.
That's right. Yes. He said, and as I suspend my campaign today, I have renewed faith, deeper faith that the Lord will show me the way forward and fulfill the purpose of my life. So,
what is
but
that?
All of these people who dropped out
said that
about
the Lord had a way forward for
something
them.
Something about the Lord. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, it was questionable why he was still there
in the race.
Anyway.
So it wasn't much of a loss to the race. Although I will say that it was like I was shocked when Ted Cruz dropped out. And then it was like I had won the lottery when Kasich dropped out. I was like, how much better could the news get? The news, it was like good news just kept piling on top of it.
I know.
Like, what do you even do with that much good news?
Interestingly, the Cruz and the Kasich campaigns, then after they both
got dropped
out.
We got an interesting window into why they couldn't cooperate.
They started campaigning against each other for something.
This is an interesting look at why the Never Trump movement could not coalesce around anyone.
Yeah.
Jeff Rowe, who was once the manager of Cruz's campaign, the manager of his once campaign, former campaign, tweeted that anyone writing a, quote, post-mortem on the race should, quote, include a healthy dose of Kasich. Defeating Trump required a head-to-head. Kasich kept that from happening.
Yeah. Now, that's wrong.
That's wrong because when Trump finally did start pulling out his 50% victories, which was all seven of the last states that voted and was what dropped all what pushed these guys out of the race.
Yeah.
It's important to note that neither of them reached any percentage that was
collectively that would have beat him.
Yeah, collectively that could have beat him.
Yeah.
I mean, they were not even like if literally every person who didn't vote for Trump had voted for one of them.
Right.
They still would not have beat Donald Trump.
Yeah, exactly.
That's what getting more than 50% of the vote gives you is the ability.
Yeah, they weren't splitting some giant percentage of the electorate.
It wasn't
that's
like
not
the
what
early when like eight of them would split 75% of
the
vote.
Exactly.
That's not what happened here.
At that point, seven of them could have beat Donald Trump.
Right.
But that, I mean, that's not how it works.
That's not how math or primaries work.
That's not how
so unfortunately,
work.
That's not true.
Yeah.
Then John Weaver, who was a Kasich strategist, whose name is unfortunately close to Jeff Weaver, Bernie's campaign manager's name, argued that other losing campaigns should look inward, and then in another tweet said, nothing worse than entitled losers.
Well, that's true.
So they're trading the kind of juvenile insults that this race has become famous for.
Yes. We're going to talk about juvenile insults in a little bit, because I have a lot to say about juvenile insults coming up.
Yes.
And
Brent does have a thought.
And it's not in regards to what you might think it will be.
This is it's going to be exciting.
Stay tuned.
Before we do that, though, we want to just take a moment to look back at the glory that was the non-human interaction on the Cruz Fiorina
2016 campaign. Yeah.
We wrote a post about it last week. We would like to direct you to that so that you can get a look at all of these moments yourself.
Yeah, it's on the blog. It's on brainfosite.com. You should read it slash watch it.
Because watch it. It's a visual thing. But we just want to do a quick rundown.
Yeah.
There were two videos of Cruz's children running away from him or trying to flick him away.
She's terrifying.
I mean, he's terrifying.
Like,
so
obviously.
Also, he's talked openly about spanking.
Oh,
so
yes, that's right.
No wonder his children don't
like
him.
Yeah, they don't like him.
Yeah. There was the glory of the dump of raw footage from Cruz's campaign.
Yes.
Of every, side eye from his father, like every awkward
of all
moment.
All of the additional things that they shot for his television ads that didn't get used.
Yes.
Yes.
And it was a glorious 14 hours it was of footage that there are many online things that condense that into
He also had a lot of trouble holding hands with Carly Fiorina.
Too much.
That was
It's
upsetting.
Like he's never held a human hand before. The two of them who were supposed
His wife probably runs from him much in the same way
the
that his children do.
The two of them, in an attempt to look unified as they stood together at the podium, tried to raise their arms together, but couldn't.
Real fumbling.
It was like neither of them really wanted to touch the other, so like they just couldn't get a grip on each other.
Yeah, it was like what you imagine, like the two people holding hands for the first time with each other.
It's like if
it was
in
a real
kindergarten
mess.
At the height of boys having cooties, you were asked to raise arms in solidarity with the most cootie-filled boy in the class.
He also pretended to not see Carly Fiorina very obviously fall off of the stage right in front of his own
two
eyes.
She announced his entrance and then fell right off the stage, and he entered as if nothing weird had happened.
I know.
Nothing was amiss.
The footage of that is worth checking out this blog for if you
funny.
Haven't seen it, because it literally just looks like she's fallen through a trap door. Because it's a shot of like straight on of her, and she introduces him, and then she literally like disappears straight down. I mean, it's
and then
good
stuff. The final moment of the Cruz campaign sort of sums up everything about the Cruz campaign thus far. He goes to hug his father, and his wife Heidi tries to hug them in a group hug. And instead of including her in the group hug, he punches her in the face and elbows her.
I know. It's like a two-step thing that he does, because as he reaches around, he punches her,
and then
he grabs
his father and elbows
and
her. So
good.
It's exactly how his campaign should have ended.
Yep.
Punching his wife in the face by accident in an attempt to avoid physical connection with any person. So that's just a little treat for you on the blog that you should take a look at.
Yep.
It's worth taking that walk down memory lane.
Yeah.
And now we move on to who is and is not going to fall in line with the Trump situation.
Oh,
there's
boy.
A lot going on in the Republican party.
That was the big fallout after we finally ended up with
a presumptive nominee.
It was like, here we go.
Yeah, now we're Donald Trump is running for president.
All the Republicans had to decide whether they're going to vote for him or not. And a lot of it happened
publicly.
And
it's an uncomfortable choice for anyone.
Yeah.
On Thursday, Paul Ryan announced that he was not prepared to endorse Trump.
Yeah.
This was just on the heels of Cruz and Kasich exiting. And he didn't say he would never do it, but he did say that he was not prepared to do it now. He said, quote, I'm not there yet.
Yeah.
And that he needs to be convinced that Trump can, or that the GOP can elect, quote, a standard bearer that bears our standards.
Yes.
Because the big issue that everyone has with Trump is that he doesn't actually represent a coherent Republican vision of any sort. Right. He's representing like a hodgepodge of like Sanders and Cruz ideas, basically.
Right. Yes.
So it's kind of confusing to endorse Trump if you're an old line Republican.
Yes.
But so Trump got pissed off about this and responded in a statement saying that he was not ready to support Speaker Ryan's agenda.
Oh, boy.
So shots fired.
So they should work well together, yes. Should he end up in
then
the White House.
He was on Meet the Press on today, on Sunday, and Trump basically threatened to potentially pull Ryan as the GOP's convention chair, which is a role that traditionally the Speaker of the House has.
Right.
So that's crazy. They're going to meet this Thursday on Capitol Hill, try to hash it out a little.
Probably have a photo op of some sort.
I would imagine. But even as Trump sort of, he refrained from saying anything definitive about his plans for Ryan, but his mouthpieces got up on the scene.
They sure did.
Sarah Palin told CNN today, Sunday, that she's going to back Ryan's primary challenger in an upcoming House race because she thinks that Paul Ryan is soon to be, quote, cantered.
Cantered.
As in Eric Cantor, who, as we remember, very high profile loss to the, he was the whip, I think. Was he the House whip?
Yes, he was. He was supposed to be the next speaker.
And he was supposed to be the next speaker, and he got primaried out by a Tea Partier.
Yeah, exactly.
Even though he was basically a Tea Partier.
As nutty as it comes.
He was one of the nuttier people out there.
But this is
not
now,
nutty enough.
Ann Coulter said the same thing on Real Time on Friday night.
Right.
She called Paul Ryan the next Eric Cantor. So that's a thing that the fringe
the
right
fringe
is
starting to work on.
With.
And I'm
going
to say something about the fringe right. They've been fairly effective at doing this in
they
the past.
Have.
So I wouldn't want them to be talking
terrified.
About cantering me.
Yeah,
no.
I know.
Paul Ryan should be terrified.
Yeah.
Trump is pretending to be really unruffled because he's been walking around talking about how it's, you know, he's gotten all of these people brought into the party and gotten millions and millions of votes, and he's winning with the most votes of any Republican, like, ever.
Well, and that is...
In the primaries.
And he's right about that.
So
I think
a tremendous group
and
of people
was,
that are voting.
You know, I bring up Ann Coulter again, and I don't really like to use her.
No,
as a,
Brent
I don't like
loves
to,
Ann Coulter.
I do. I love her in the way that I've talked about before, and that I think that she would be like a fun drink buddy at the Abbey.
Yeah.
But like, I don't obviously like
but
politics,
you love her politics.
And
no,
I
no.
also don't. I think that she's wrong pretty much about everything. But
all
she,
the time.
What she, you know, she's a Trump supporter, so she's obviously, you know, saying whatever, you know, he wants her to, or whatever she thinks will, you know, move his agenda forward.
Right.
But she said. Because they were talking about, she was on Real Time on Friday night, and they were talking about, like, this whole party unification situation or whatever, and she was like, the party's unified.
Right,
like,
they're unified around Trump.
The party elite isn't unified around Trump, but Trump is going to get the most votes that any Republican has ever gotten in a Republican primary before.
Right.
So, like, the voters are unified around Trump.
Yeah.
Now, it's probably the thing that sort of, like, allows me to sleep at night about him... you know, not becoming the next president is that, you know, something like, what is it, 26 or 27% of the country is a registered Republican and ultimately less than 50% of them voted for him. I would assume that the rest of, like, anyone who is not included in that percentage that I just gave to you probably thinks that he's a fucking goon and a terrifying human person to, like, that shouldn't be the president. So, like, that helps me sleep at night. But, like, on the other hand, like, yeah, I mean, there is Republican unity.
Yeah.
They've got it. It's Trump.
It's Trump.
They're... Like, who cares what Paul Ryan thinks?
Right. No, I mean,
you know?
Is,
I mean,
in both parties, we're seeing a disconnect between the voters and the party elite. And in the Republican Party, it just played out in a much more public manner.
I was going to say, and the Republican Party base has been mad at the party elite
for
a long time and in a much more vehement way than the Democratic base has been. The Democrats are sort of starting to come around on that.
Right.
I'm happy about that. But
happy.
Like the Republicans have really been on it for
they
almost
got
10
thoroughly
years now.
Embarrassed by the Bush presidency. And so they have been angry since then.
They've been angry since.
They know how badly the Bush presidency went. And it was embarrassing to be a Republican during the Bush presidency.
Yeah.
And especially in the aftermath of the Bush presidency.
And they've been mad at the last two candidates for president who they think are losers.
Which...
They're
not
are.
Wrong about.
I mean, they're technically right.
Right.
But I mean, you know, this has been brewing for a long time. So nobody should be shocked by this.
No, this is what's interesting to watch now is to watch what party elite do to catch up.
Yes.
So we have John McCain, for example, made headlines today because he would not dismiss Trump's comments on immigration. That's a lot coming from him because he runs in a state that has a huge section of Latino voters.
I'm surprised
30% of the
vote
of the electorate in Arizona is Latino, and he's in a primary right now.
He's in a general right now that is close, and
he could lose a seat.
Some tape came out this week of him at a fundraiser like about a month or so ago talking about how if Trump became the nominee that he was going to be in for the race of his life.
Yeah.
So what he's doing right now, especially considering that he's such a fucking maverick or whatever he likes to call himself, like, is surprising to me because I feel like
he's a wimpy maverick. What,
right? Well,
no, but like, he also, remember, he's the one who chose Sarah Palin as his running mate. He has shown bad judgment when it comes to associating with Tea Party-like figures and other extremist figures in the past.
That's true.
He really isn't as uncomfortable with that as he would seem as somebody who's, like, friendly with a lot of Democrats in the sort of old-school, genteel, like, Senate way.
Right.
You know, he's a guy who's, like, sort of known to be, like, fun to have at a dinner party. But, like, he has shown bad political judgment when it comes to these extremists in the party. I think he panics.
Yeah.
It's like how Lindsey Graham panics, but in a different way. Him and his best buddy, Lindsey, have different ways of panicking. Yeah. But they're both panickers. Yep. They're panic endorsers. And so he said that, you know, Hispanic outreach is important, but he wouldn't say that those comments were inappropriate, which is going to be a problem in where he's running in a close race with 30%.
His challenger is going to have a field day with that.
He did say, hilariously, that Trump should take back his comments about not liking, quote, people who, or preferring, quote, people who weren't captured. Early on, John McCain in past interviews had said some not nice things about Trump early in this race. And so at one point in July, Donald Trump, in reference to a comment that McCain had made about him, said that he preferred, or that he liked, quote, people who weren't captured, which is a direct shot at John McCain, who was a POW. It's like how I like people who weren't in plane crashes,
right?
Crashes.
Like, I know.
But so he, instead of associating that comment with him directly, it was directed at him on purpose. He was sort of like, he should take it back because it's offensive to POWs. And I was like, okay.
Right. Yeah.
Desperate.
I mean, come on.
Desperate, McCain. But yeah, I think this is a sort of interesting thing to watch people, like old seasoned hacks like McCain, figure out how to maneuver.
Yeah.
Because he didn't not say that they should do outreach to Hispanic voters. He just said that he wasn't going to say anything about Trump's comments, which directly sort of like insult all Hispanic voters, basically.
Exactly. Well, I think...
And he called them racist and criminals.
Right,
he called, he called immigrants racist and criminals. So like that doesn't play well in a community that's largely defined by their ties to immigrants.
My guess is that he probably is banking on the demographics in Arizona, maybe not quite being there in a way to defeat him quite
but
yet.
But we talk about Arizona going purple
all the time. But it,
and they currently have two Republican senators.
The thing about Arizona is because they have such a huge Latino population is that they also have a lot of angry white people who would like to kick them
out. That's true. Yeah, so, this is the land of Arpaio and Jen Brewer and all those
so
people.
My guess is that he's banking on they're still, those people still outnumbering.
Yeah.
The growing Hispanic
but
population.
But I think that pretty soon that's, I mean, maybe in this year it won't be there yet, but I mean, I think that that's
not
a smart, it's not a smart bet to take anymore in Arizona.
No, I agree.
You know, I think.
Yeah. We'll see how it happens. I mean, if he loses, it's going to be because of this.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I don't think he gains anything from associating himself with Trump, but actually maybe he does.
Maybe he does.
Because Trump does have support with a lot of those loon bags in Arizona. The Arpaio and Jan Brewer people, they've both endorsed him. Yep. They've been campaigning with him.
Totally.
So maybe he's hoping to grab some angry white people.
Yeah.
I mean, they're not going to vote for a Democrat.
No, they're not.
Angry white people do not do that. Angry white people are the most dangerous people on earth, you guys.
No. Yeah.
They are the worst. Yep. Even not angry white people are pretty dangerous, but like angry white people are not to be trusted. Here are what some of the other Republicans are up to.
Yes.
Because there's a lot of Republicans who have, since Tuesday and even before, started to kind of like make some noise on this issue. So everyone in media is trying to figure out who is and is not going to endorse Trump. And so the New York Times had a rundown of it. CNN had a rundown of it. CNN also reached out to like 16 Republican leaders of various sorts. And none of them said they were going to go to the convention. So that was kind of where their heads were at when they wrote this story. Mitt Romney is the last person who publicly has said he's not going to go to the convention.
The last two Republican nominees are not going to the convention.
Right.
Which
John
is
McCain
and John McCain.
And neither President Bush. Neither of the Bushes are going. And now Mitt Romney is not going.
Yep.
People who are maybe or definitely not endorsing Trump include Jeff Flake.
Interestingly, from Arizona.
From Arizona.
But his
re-election
is not for, he's probably more concerned about the demographics because they're going to be even less in his favor when he has to run again.
Yeah, and when it turns out this was all a horrible mistake, he doesn't want to have been on the record as having endorsed
him. Bingo. Smart of him, Jeff Flake.
Jeff Flake, by the way, have I ever told you that I've spoken to him on the phone?
Yes, you have.
And while, I mean, I wouldn't endorse Jeff Flake's policies on anything other than opening trade with Cuba.
He's not a buffoon.
He was not a buffoon. No, right. He was and very polite on the phone.
Yeah.
He called me personally to for an interview.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
I was writing an article in an Arizona-based publication, but I mean... He wasn't just calling to chat, but I mean, you know, anyway. He told CNN that some of Trump's positions make it very difficult for me to support him. Mm-hmm. Lindsey Graham has said that he will not endorse Donald Trump. Yeah. Lindsey Graham, by the way, has basically endorsed Poppy Bush for president. So I don't know how relevant his endorsement is anymore. Yeah. But he said, I just really believe that the Republican Party has been conned here, and this guy is not a reliable conservative Republican. Well, he's right about that. He told that to Dana Bash, and he's not wrong.
Right.
I don't know that that matters, but it's not wrong.
Yeah.
Kelly Ayotte has been making noise in both directions. It's been sort of interesting.
She's really
to
trying to play both sides because she's in a...
She's in a race.
She's in a tighter race than probably John McCain.
She's in a race against... We talked about this a couple weeks ago. She's in a race against the sitting New Hampshire governor.
Right.
Who has left her seat. They've both obviously won statewide office.
Right.
They're in...
They're both liked.
It's neck and neck. They're both liked.
Yeah.
But Kelly Ayotte has been... She's kind of an idiot, but she's not one of the more conservative Republican senators.
She's
and so
in the John McCain,
she's
Lindsey
in the John McCain, Lindsey Graham
sort of like
she
trying
often
to be
cooperates
a
with them
sometimes.
On vague deals that aren't great deals, but aren't the worst deals.
Right.
And she has both said that she will support the nominee, but also has said that she will not endorse anyone in this cycle. So she's taking a very ambiguous position.
Yeah.
Been interesting because some media has declared that she has basically announced that she'll support Trump by saying she'll support the nominee.
Well,
and then other media is saying that she won't endorse anyone in the cycle. She said both.
Yeah.
So no one knows what she's going to do.
Yeah.
And
that's how she likes it.
That's how she's probably going to keep it if she's got her wits about her. The big story of this week was Ben Sasse, who's a Nebraska senator that no one has ever spoken about in history.
Never heard of this.
No,
at all.
He's a mystery person. What, did he take Ben Nelson's seat or something? Like, who
Maybe.
Is he?
I don't know.
Anyway, he wrote this crazy Facebook diatribe against Trump in the wee hours of Thursday morning, like Wednesday night, middle of the night, Thursday, like wee hours.
Probably had a glass of wine.
Had a glass of wine, got on his computer and thought, I'm going to tell them what's what on Facebook.
That's right.
So he wrote, he wrote a thing that sort of culminates with, why shouldn't America draft an honest leader who will focus on 70% solutions for the next 4 years, you know, an adult. He then, though, sort of disqualified, you know, people were talking about him potentially as this Eric Erickson, Never Trump movement, third party runner.
Yeah.
He kind of disqualified himself. He said that the would-be candidate should have a schedule that allows him to campaign constantly and should exclude parents of young kids, and he has three young children. He had been previously aligned with the Never Trump movement, though, and he voted for Ted Cruz in the Nebraska primary last month.
Yeah.
So, and publicly. So that was a sort of flash in the pan that came and went where everyone got really excited about him because of this post.
And Eric Erickson, who's a conservative blogger, has been saying the same thing. I think this is an interesting strategy, and I think that they should go for it, not just because it would allow
the
Democrats
Hillary
to
Hillary the election.
But it sort of gives them an out in the sense that they don't have to... They don't endorse Hillary, obviously.
And they don't want to do that.
They don't want to do that. They're not going to tell people to vote for Hillary. They can say that they are sticking to their conservative principles.
Right.
And they can just sort of, you know, they cannot have blood on their hands, basically. You know, they don't.
With their voters, it's more important to not have blood on your hands than it is to have an effective solution.
Right. It's better for them to have a candidate that they actually think stands for their beliefs than to spend the next 6 months running against the nominee of their party.
Yeah.
Which is ultimately what you would do if you're going to continue the Never Trump movement.
Yeah.
So we'll see if that actually plays out. I don't know if it will or not.
And you guys, it's already been so exciting.
Like,
I don't,
at that point, like, let's
go
also,
for it.
Like, let's also have our own.
Yeah.
Like, let's
run.
Let's write Bernie Sanders in.
Yeah.
Let's run that campaign.
Let's all do it. Let's all go for it this year. This is the year to go. This is our one chance to go for it.
It's already crazy enough.
Like, let's have seven people in the general for all I care. Like that sounds great. In terms of who's endorsing Donald Trump, an interesting list is also emerging. Jeff Sessions back in February endorsed him. That was old news.
Senator from
Illinois. And he's been advising Trump as well on immigration, I think, or on foreign policy or something.
Rick Perry. And this is interesting because when Rick Perry dropped out, he railed on Trump.
Yes.
I mean, he was like, he was sort
when
of...
When Rick Perry dropped out very early in the primary process.
But Rick Perry was an early Never Trump adapter.
Yes.
I mean, that his whole him when he got out of the
Paul
race,
LePage, that was two people that have done about faces on the Trump movement. He didn't go quite as fast as Paul LePage did.
Yeah.
He didn't try to start the Never Trump movement and then the next week endorse Trump. But he was it's close enough.
Close.
We also have Bill Cole, who's a pretty high profile GOP candidate for the governor in West Virginia.
Right.
He's endorsed Trump and they're about to vote, so that is why that's relevant.
Yeah.
He has also been appearing with Trump at rallies, so embraced the sort of Trump approach to politics, which is a sign, drew a comparison between the
Mitch
two.
Mitch McConnell, interestingly.
Yeah, he said, "I have committed to supporting the nominee chosen by the Republican voters, and Donald Trump, the presumptive nominee, is now on the verge of clinching that nomination."
Yep.
He said the word nominee too many times in that sentence. I think he was trying to talk around the point so that no one would know how to follow him through it.
Yeah.
And then Rob Portman declared on Wednesday that he would continue his commitment to support the party's nominee. That's he's also in a close race, and I think that's an interesting choice.
I agree.
I don't know that he... and Kelly Ayotte are sort of in the same boat, and she has said that she'll support the party's nominee, but also has said that she won't, whereas he has not yet made contradictory statements. So he seems like he's definitively in the support camp.
Yeah, exactly.
You got to make the contradicting statement if you're going to stay in the never plans camp.
Right. Yeah.
But so I think they talked and CNN talked to a couple Republican strategists, and one of them made an interesting point, I thought, which was that he is sort of worried that Paul Ryan is setting himself up to be in a situation that he can't ever get out of, where Paul Ryan is sort of taking a strong and very public stance against Trump right now. It's going to be very hard because he's going to also be sort of like helping run these House races and trying to keep the House, you know, races going. It's going to be hard for him when Trump is the nominee to later come down in favor of him. Yes. And so he's essentially going to be running House races against Trump.
Yeah.
They're running his House races as if they are sort of like not associated or
But a lot of House candidates are going to have to do that themselves anyway.
Well, that's
true.
I mean, I want, you know, he might be giving cover to some of these people.
Yeah.
Which will probably help more than it will harm.
Yeah.
But it's going to put the Republican Party in an interesting predicament in the general, because local races are going to have to be run as if they're not associated with the presidential race.
Party.
And that's what drives turnout at these things.
Yeah.
You know, the reason that we want to sort of invest in House and Senate races on the Democratic side in a presidential year is more people turn up to vote.
Right.
We never win things in off years, ever.
No, this is,
our voters
this is
do
our
not
time.
Fucking show up.
No.
But, like, this is a moment that we can trust a lot of voters to show up because people know that the president, you know, presidential race is a high-profile, important thing. And so it's sort of, it's going to be problematic for the right if they're going to have to run their House races as a
against
separate...
Against the presidential
race, yeah.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, if you're wondering if Trump has plans that he's sticking to, and if you're wondering why any of these people don't think he's a reliable conservative, it's because he's not.
The only plan that he's sticking to is the wall and to get rid of the Muslims.
Well, but he's... but on everything else, he's, quote, negotiable.
Negotiable, that's
he
right.
said on Meet the Press, you know, he was on Meet the Press railing against Paul Ryan on Sunday.
Yep.
One of the other highlights of that interview was that his tax plan is negotiable. He said... in typical Trump fashion, for the wealthy, about taxes, for the wealthy, I think, frankly, it's going to have to go up. And you know what? It really should go up. That's interesting because his own tax plan does not have taxes for the wealthy. Cuts taxes.
Decrease taxes for the rich. Yeah.
So he was asked about that.
Yeah.
Like, oh, by the way, interestingly, your own plan does not in any way support this vision.
Yeah.
And he was like, well, that's just the opening bid. Which I think... is another thing that's going to connect with voters, actually.
Yeah,
because
that's...
we have been seeing total inaction, the sort of Ted Cruz style of politics, take place in Congress for years. Nothing has gotten done. It's been very frustrating to people. They did not want to see a shutdown. They did not want to see all of these things that have happened in Congress not go, you know, this sort of like lack of action. And Donald Trump is basically coming in and saying, I'm going to get us a good deal.
That is,
but I'm going to make the deal.
That is on the list of things that scares me about this election.
Yeah, because
right
I think he's currently looking like the guy that can make the deal. And I know that that's a crazy... that's not true.
No, it's not
true. It's not a real thing, you guys. But
if he convince, if he can convince enough people,
and if he's using rhetoric that's going to connect to the exact concerns that voters have about what's been going on in Congress, you know, Hillary Clinton is not going to be able to echo that language.
If there's one thing that everyone hates, it's Congress.
Everyone. Yeah, that they have no approval rating in Congress.
Yeah.
They have a negative approval rating.
More they, have an approval rating that's, like, what, worse than, like, spiders and, you know.
Yeah, I think sharks are better
like viruses
than,
and things
than
like
Congress.
That. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And I think even roaches were.
Yeah.
I think cockroaches, which, by the way, shouldn't be liked by anyone, are better liked than Congress.
Yeah.
So, in any case. But he basically, in this interview, says, you know, I have no illusions. I don't think it's going to be the final plan. I am proposing what I think is the plan, and that's the floor that we're going to start the negotiations from. It's unlike Hillary Clinton. He understands, or he's pretending to understand, how to negotiate.
Right.
And Hillary Clinton is not a good negotiator. Historically, that's been her biggest foil, I think,
yeah.
is that the Clinton plan of negotiating is to offer the worst plan for you and then continue to negotiate from that from point. From there.
Yeah, exactly.
And so I think that this is a very scary thing to have the person who feels like they can make progress happen or sounds like they can. I mean, obviously I have no illusions that he can make right, progress exactly. happen, but who sounds like they can make progress happen be a loonbag crazy person.
Yeah.
Who wants to build a wall and make Mexico pay for it.
It's not great, guys.
It's not great.
Yeah.
Also, he got into a hilarious Twitter feud with Liz Warren, who like really went on like a tirade against yeah. him.
Who's
running her Twitter, by the way? They should be commended.
Yeah.
They are taking no shit on Liz yeah. Warren's Twitter.
Yeah. So he said, he sent out this tweet. He said, let's properly check goofy Elizabeth Warren's record to see if she's Native American. I say she's a fraud.
This is an old scandal
yeah,
that
exactly.
emerged when she was running.
Running against and it was like Scott a Brown.
Ridiculous
yeah.
scandal then.
Yeah. He said, goofy Elizabeth Warren, Hillary Clinton's flunky, has a career that is totally based on a lie. She is not Native American. That's not what her career is
her
based on,
her career is not
by
based on her being Native American. Yeah. And also, I wouldn't call her Hillary Clinton's flunky.
No.
That's a misread of the situation.
Yeah, bingo. And then he lastly said, I hope corrupt Hillary Clinton chooses goofy Elizabeth Warren as his running mate. Defeat them both.
So then Liz Warren gets in and says, I called out Donald Trump on Tuesday. 45 million saw it. He's so confident about his, quote, counterpunch, he waited until Friday night. Lame. And then goes on to say, goofy. Donald Trump, for a guy with the, quote, best words, that's a pretty lame nickname. Weak. And then she said, Donald Trump is a bully who has a single play in his playbook. Offensive lies thrown at anyone who calls him out. Then goes on to say, Donald Trump spews insults and lies because he can't have an honest conversation about his dangerous vision for America.
She's not done.
She's not done. But here's the thing. You can beat a bully, not by tucking tail and running, but by holding your ground. If you think recycling Scott Brown's hate-filled attacks on my family is going to shut me up, Donald Trump, think again, buddy. Weak. It's not over.
No.
Donald Trump lied his way through the primaries without being held accountable. That's over. Whatever Donald Trump says, we won't shut up. We won't back down. This election is too important, and he won't set foot in the White House. So then he gets back in the in the game.
Goofy Elizabeth Warren is weak and ineffective. Does nothing. All talk, no action. Maybe her Native American. Maybe her Native American name.
And her final jab. No, Donald Trump. Your racism, sexism, and xenophobia doesn't drive me nuts. It makes me sick, and I'm not alone.
Boom. Snap. Boom. Mic drop.
Mic drop.
All that.
It's over.
Yeah.
So in any case. Donald Trump and Liz Warren just feuding on Twitter like everyone is with Donald Trump.
So one of the takeaways from this week was that everyone seems to think that we are now in general election mode. I don't like that because I'm still, you know, still hashtag still Sanders.
Right.
But anyway, I can, you know, I can do math.
I can hold two. I can hold two thoughts in my head.
Exactly.
I am still Sanders.
I have always said that it almost makes me more happy to vote for him as a protest to Hillary Clinton than, I mean, obviously I would prefer him to be the nominee.
Right.
But I mean, like, but that makes me happy.
We're hashtag still Sanders all the way.
For sure.
That doesn't mean that we can't see with our own eyes what's happening out in the world.
And there are a few reasons that emerged this week that make me, other than the ones we've sort of already hit on in this podcast.
Brent texted me
I'm having fear
on
fantasies
Friday
about this election.
Saying that he was having panic attacks about what was going on.
Yeah. And a few specific things happened this week.
And something that we started talking about last week when we started talking
about
the
Veep
picks.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. Because there were a few like boring, moderate like snores.
Yeah. I think mostly boring, moderate snores.
Mostly boring, moderate snores. Yeah. So this week we found out that she is courting Bush donors.
No.
Yes.
Stop.
Yes. There was a Politico report on Thursday that claimed that she was supporting supporters that had previously supported the Bush family because she's trying to convince them that she best represents their values better than the current presumptive nominee Donald Trump.
And we're seeing other reports that her and the DNC have been sort of expanding their reach to start recruiting traditionally Republican supporters who might not be so into a Trump
presidency.
This is
not, she doesn't need to do this. This is not what she needs
we have said
to do.
Many times, and we'll say again, when Democrats vote, Democrats win. There are enough Democratic voters that we don't need support from Republicans in order to win. We only need to court to our own voters.
Right.
That's
she
not the Clinton strategy, but that's the Democratic
strategy.
She needs strategy.
To shore up her base.
Yeah.
Right now.
And the base, she's sitting on the biggest fucking generation in America.
Yeah.
And is basically thumbing her nose up at them
totally.
By engaging in this kind of behavior.
Yeah.
You this know, is the money that Sanders consistently
she
has had more
money
than anyone in this fucking race.
If she can get half the Sanders money, she doesn't need any of the Bush money.
No, exactly. And this Bush money just makes, it just echoes the same concerns that are making people not excited to vote for her in the first
place.
And
Sanders went after
it's
her for
not,
this. He sent out a fundraiser.
Yeah,
the way I found out about this in the first place was I got a fundraising email and then I was like, oh, wait a minute.
It's not the money isn't going to be worth the loss.
Yeah.
It's not worth it to get, you know, she can make more money talking to rich people, I'm sure.
Sure.
It's not, the money's not worth it, though.
No.
She's not going to experience the kind of groundswell excitement that is propelling a Sanders candidacy without super PAC support.
Half the into reason. The,
like, this is
the
just,
reason that most of Sanders people don't like her in the first place is because she takes this money.
Exactly.
So it's like,
don't expand your reach to people who traditionally don't even support our platform or values.
Exactly.
That's not a way to get these votes. And again, it is not money that wins elections.
Right.
It is votes. Yeah. It doesn't matter if you have, Jeb Bush showed us better than anyone. It doesn't matter if you have $114 million
in
the bank.
All of them spent more money than Donald Trump did.
Exactly.
Granted, that was because he was getting free media, but I mean, regardless.
He was getting free media, though.
Yeah.
Bernie Sanders is getting free Twitter outreach. He's getting free social media outreach.
Yeah.
You can get free
She can have that, too. She does plays her cards
right. If people are excited about you.
Yeah.
Barack Obama got a lot of free social media outreach.
Yeah. He also spent $1 million.
He spent $1 million. But he spent millions of dollars. But I mean, exciting candidates generate their own outreach. It is, and that is outreach generated by people who can actually show up at polls and vote for you.
Correct.
The Bush
donors. Not just one person writing a giant check to your super
who
PAC.
Who write a giant check to your super PAC are not,
that's one
they're
person.
Not voters.
No. Yeah, exactly.
You want the excitement from the voters.
Yeah. But the thing that almost makes me a little bit more nervous is that she, besides that, which is
fundraising,
which is concerning, I don't know that she's, her strategy is not
her
right
advertising
yet.
Strategy.
It
is,
just started. So right. I'm gonna rag on her specifically for this thing that she did this week. And I'm gonna hope that it's just because exactly what you said. Like, this happens in the general election a lot. It happens in primaries too.
Yeah.
You sort of figure out the best way to go after your opponent.
Right.
But my fear is that we have seen the Trump writing on the wall for a while. And if this was her big go-to play for the first advertisement of the general election, then we've got some problems.
She because is not going to be able to play in his league.
A lot of people on the left really liked this ad, and I think it was because it was sort of funny. It played well. It seemed like a shareable thing. And I definitely saw it shared by everyone.
It's a montage of Republicans talking about Trump.
Exactly. And when I first watched it, I was like, ooh, this is good.
Right.
And then I was like, but wait.
Who's the target audience for this?
Who could possibly be the target audience for this? Like, people who already hate Trump? There was nothing in it that, there's no point of view from her at all.
Right. You don't, there's no reason to support Hillary Clinton because of this ad.
Correct. And
you
could
support anyone because of this
ad. And it was also
ad.
Just things that
it's
had
like a
been
a never Trump ad.
It was a never Trump ad, and he just blew all of those people away already. So if she'd been sitting on an ad for the last 2 months, this shouldn't have been the ad.
Right.
It
plays with her current supporters.
Right. It, well, sure.
They're already going to vote for her.
And besides that, before even seeing this ad, my fear for her is that she has spent all of her career having to refute every single attack that has ever been made against her. And oftentimes because she probably felt like she had to, and a lot of them were really
nasty.
It's
been tough. She's gotten nasty attacks. She's a woman who's very high profile, so she gets a lot of sexist attacks.
But that's going to happen again.
Yeah.
And this is what Donald Trump's specialty is. Donald Trump this week has already been talking about all of the terrible things that Hillary Clinton did to ruin the lives of the women that Bill Clinton cheated on her with.
Yeah.
You know, if she is going to spend the next 6 months of this campaign going spiraling down the toilet with him,
Trump attack.
Right, exactly. Then she will lose. She can win a campaign against him, but she will lose a name-calling competition with him.
Yeah.
That.
I mean, we've seen him reduce many
professional politicians. Marco Rubio, who people think is a skilled politician, is now leaving public office.
And it's because
for
he got
the rest of his life, and he left the campaign questioning Donald Trump's penis size.
Yeah.
This is a man who is a you know, respected senator from a very large
theoretically
state.
Theoretically respected senator from a very large state.
And this is what Donald Trump reduces people to.
Yeah.
And I feel like Hillary Clinton is rife to be reduced to that.
Oh, yeah. She, if anyone can, I mean, you know, we have seen Bernie Sanders doesn't answer her calls or questions because he has a stump speech and he sticks to his stump speech and he's talking about issues and he doesn't really care about the rest.
Right.
Hillary Clinton has spent her entire career doing the opposite.
Right.
Where it's always been a personal attack on her. And that's not always been fair. I mean, no, she's a lot of it has just been because of behavior Bill has engaged in.
I'll give her all of that.
And because she's a woman and because she's a strong woman for all of those things, for sure.
I get it.
But she's running against a misogynistic prick.
That's right.
She is, I think we are going to see some of the baser instincts, just as we saw her and, you know, and Mitt Romney and John McCain run codedly racist campaigns against Barack Obama. We're about to see a codedly sexist campaign emerge. We're going to find that Americans are not as evolved on gender issues as we would hope. Yep. We're seeing a lot of that, and people arguing that transgender people can't use bathrooms.
She's going to have to rise above it and laugh it off more than she
can
is going to want to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and she's also going to, I mean, this is very unprecedented for someone of her sort of degree of professionalism to be facing an opponent like this.
Yeah.
She has never run against somebody like this. No. None of these people have. That's why they don't know what to do.
Exactly.
That's why they got into name-calling competitions with him. Yeah. Because it was sort of like, well, nothing else is working. Right. We might as well try going down to his
and
level.
And I don't pretend to necessarily know the answer, but I know that it's not this.
I know it's not this. And I think that it is going to take an amount of creative thinking that her people are not capable of.
I would
to find it.
I don't know that I've ever agreed with you more on anything.
I'm hoping that they have plans to absorb a shit ton of Sanders people into her campaign if she becomes the nominee. And I don't know that they will, because those Sanders people aren't going to want to cooperate with them. The Sanders people have their own sort of game.
Yeah.
But I'm hoping that they have some new blood who can think creatively about how to be like, okay, you're not going to win this sort of like racist, angry, white, middle, working class vote.
Yeah.
They aren't going to vote for you.
Yeah.
How do we make sure that we get other voters to vote for you instead?
Right.
How do we make sure that young voters want to vote for you?
Right.
They're not going to want to vote for Trump. He doesn't represent their values. That's fine. They're ripe for the picking.
Yeah.
But how do we make sure that all of these other people who are going to listen to the insult and laugh them off can hear your message above them?
Right.
Like, that's where I think they really need to focus. Because the answer isn't obvious, but I think that a strategy is at least imaginable.
Right.
I don't think she has to descend to his level, but I think that she does. She's going to have to compete in some demographics that she's not comfortable with, and she's going to have to give up some demographics that she is comfortable with in order to make it happen.
Yeah.
There are just some people that are going to be easily distracted by this, who are traditional Hillary type supporters, who are centrist Democrats, who are going to find, you know, like these unions in Indiana, who are going to find Trump's message appealing, and she's going to have to let some of those people go. And in doing that, she's going to have to figure out what to do about getting those young people to the polls, because that's where she's going to be able to beat him.
Fishing for George for Bush money is
not the answer
not
to
it.
That. No, she can't compete with a lot of that.
So I'm scared.
Yeah, Brent's a little scared.
I'm scared.
Meanwhile, though, if anything, we've talked a lot about how this additional focus on the primary process is going to make the primary process stronger ultimately, and we're seeing a lot of that happen.
Yeah, because Sanders, it's been a shit show, guys.
It's been a shit show.
On both sides.
On both sides, in every way.
Right.
And so now what we're seeing, the new thing that we're seeing, is that every time that a state actually finally declares how many delegates are going for each candidate, it's a different number than we expected.
Yeah.
Sanders keeps winning extra delegates in a lot of states.
And
especially caucus states. No one knows what's happening in caucuses.
Well, and we knew that we were going to be getting results later in Washington, and this has actually been pissing off a lot of Sanders people because they knew that he won by so much that they wished that they would
have been able to allocate these.
Because, you know, they knew that they were going to pick up a lot, and boy, did they ever. Because what happened was the caucus was on March 26th, and he won 25 of the 34 delegates. It was a huge blowout. It was in that stretch where he won, nine primaries in a row or something like that. So, but there were 67 additional delegates that are, like, district-level delegates that weren't going to be divided up until the state party released the voting data that was, like, broken down by each congressional district, which still had not happened. Like, a month and a half later, we finally...
This is a big state that had a lot of delegates.
It's a big state, yeah, exactly. And we finally got those results this week. And he got 49 of those 67 delegates, which means that she got 18. So he picked up 31 delegates, which is huge. That's, like, a decent-sized state in amount of delegates
there
that we didn't know until now.
There were multiple states that voted during the last fake Super Tuesday, the Super Tuesday 100, that had less than 31 delegates allocating in total.
Yeah. So that was, like, a huge pickup this week, and I can understand why a lot of Sanders supporters were not super happy that we didn't know about that until now, because that cut the lead to 292, which is still a lot, but it had been well over 300. Yeah. And that was a talking point, too. Well, I'm ahead by over 300 delegates. And it's like, well, no,
really
you're not, actually.
Like, hasn't been improving much, though. Like, no. It really, there hasn't been an exponential improvement, the kind that actually generates momentum this whole time. It's been sort of interesting, I think, to watch, because she's been in the 300 ballpark for months now.
Yeah.
She's been ahead by 300. She got those 300 in the South, and she hasn't had to let go of the 300.
Right.
But
well, and that is the thing that I've been saying for a while, and Sanders hit on it a bit, and there was like huge backlash from the party. Just, and I get it, because you sort of want to, especially us who are, you know, big proponents of a 50 straight state strategy, you sort of like don't want to poo-poo what happened in the South.
No,
but when you look at the amount that she is winning by right now, it's in large part to do with massive blowouts in states that
will never win.
Wing out a prayer in.
No.
And it's not all that. Like, it's, you
know,
she won Florida.
More
she won Ohio.
More people have
she
voted
won
for her in this race
of course,
than Sanders.
Like, exactly. So I'm not trying to say otherwise. But, I mean, that 300 delegate, if you remove the South, I mean, we're in a hotly contested race.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, you can't do that, obviously.
You can't
because
do that.
All 50 states get to vote, and they should.
And they should.
Yeah.
But we're seeing a sort of cultural divide in the party between people who live in states that will never vote for a Democrat and people
right,
who don't,
exactly. Yes.
I think, is something that we're noticing.
So, but something similar just happened in Colorado,
yeah,
too, where they finally
ago,
had
they
their state party convention or did something, and he, like, picked up way
picked
more
Picked up
delegates.
All these delegates, yeah. Also, Maine just voted to get rid of superdelegates.
Boom.
Done. That's what we need to have happen. And they're going to bring it up at the national convention.
As
I think
should.
That we're looking at, and they've, I think the DNC might have met about it last week or the week before.
Well,
there
I
was
mean,
some meeting about it. I think
this is
going to be the election that.
This is a thing that we should have added into our what Hillary Clinton could do blog.
Yeah.
Because she is ahead in pledged delegates. She's ahead in overall
votes.
We did
votes. Add it in our
what Hillary
Clinton
was?
Blog. Yeah, we said that she should tell superdelegates to vote according to who their states
voted. Oh, no,
voted.
But I'm saying that, like, she should say that
to get rid of it.
Just get rid of it.
Yeah. Oh,
because
yeah.
Because even if we got rid of them all, she'd still have won.
No, exactly.
You know what I mean? So it doesn't affect her in any way.
But it's been affecting
to
the way that the press has been reporting, and because of that,
totally.
It's been affecting the way people are perceiving what's happening.
Right.
And it's affecting the way a lot of Democratic voters are perceiving the media not understanding what's happening
right.
and not correctly reporting what's
yes.
happening. That's been frustrating.
Yes, it is. Correct.
Next up, but this is going to be an interesting end of the month because Sanders is going to win all the rest of the states in May.
Yeah, he's about to win West Virginia on Tuesday.
Yeah.
That's coming up. He's ahead by an average of 6 points, depending on what polls.
And usually he doesn't end up with last minute losses.
No.
Hillary Clinton, a lot of last minute losses coming
up. But he's got Oregon coming up. He's going to win that. He's got North and South Dakota, which are caucuses, which will probably win. He does well in those
weird
types of things. I can't remember what else is coming up. West Virginia is the soonest
the next
one that's
big,
coming up. And
yeah.
that's. He gave a really great speech, which I saw clips of there, because the poorest county in the country is in West Virginia, and he went there and he gave a speech on poverty, and it just convinced me, I mean, I already thought this, but convinced me further that he was the only one who gets it.
Yeah.
I mean, he speaks about poverty and inequality far better than anyone does.
Yeah. No, I mean... And he is...
Even Joe Biden said that Hillary Clinton has just come around to talking
right,
about
inequality. Right, she's new to the issue.
So, I mean, he should win West Virginia.
Yeah.
He should win by more than 6 points in West Virginia.
Yeah.
Because every single poor person should come out and vote for him. But as he has said in the past, poor people don't vote,
which is part of it.
They should start doing that.
Yeah. It's hard to convince people who aren't ever seeing any change in their circumstances
exactly.
that it matters,
yeah.
which is understandable
yeah.
as well.
But he said something... He said... The life expectancy is 18 years less in this particular
That's
county
crazy.
In West Virginia than it is in, like, the richest county in, like, some D.C. suburb of
right.
Virginia or something like that, which 18 years.
That's crazy. That's a teenager.
It's insane. Yes, exactly.
18-year-olds
like
can vote.
Yes.
It's an actual voter.
Yes.
Difference.
So, I mean, yeah, it was a great speech. You should find it on YouTube. It was good. But, yeah, I mean... he's going to win West Virginia, I think, in a landslide.
I hope so.
Yeah, I do too. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I always hope so. In any case, in final news, this week was Cinco de Mayo.
Yes,
a holiday that is vaguely offensive for the most part and not a holiday celebrated in Mexico. It's a fully American holiday that
That's
was
right.
coronated right here in Southern
yeah,
California,
where people
I'm pretty
drink
sure.
margaritas, which I found out is not that big of a drink in Mexico.
No.
The Paloma.
Big drink in Mexico.
Also, maybe better than a margarita.
I would not argue with you there.
Yeah.
But so the ways that we celebrate Cinco de Mayo generally are as offensive as they can be. And so we're wearing sombreros. We're at a Mexican-themed restaurant of some sort.
Right, that doesn't have actual Mexican food
out. No. And if we're like Donald Trump at all, we eat fake foods that are not in any way traditional to Mexico, like tostada bowls.
That's right.
Donald Trump chose to commemorate Cinco de Mayo this year with his latest Latino outreach strategy, which included tweeting a picture of him eating a tostada bowl and saying, "Happy Cinco de Mayo. The best taco bowls are made here in Trump Tower Grill. I love Hispanics!" Exclamation point. Hilariously, somebody discovered that one of the papers that he was standing, that he was sitting
that
on,
the taco bowl was on top of,
was a photo of his ex-wife Marla Maples in a bikini.
In a bikini, like an old photo. Like how is that? Sitting
why
on
is
his
that
desk?
On his desk?
What is that doing there?
It's so weird.
A placemat.
It's just like a placemat that's like of ex-wives in bikinis.
Oh God!
If anyone could,
disgusting.
If anyone
it's
would.
Probably got his daughter on it too. I mean, we know how beautiful he thinks she is.
Yes, too beautiful. More beautiful than anyone should think their own daughter is. In any case, that's the news this week on our 200th episode.
Happy 200th!
Happy 200th! We did it.
As we said on Facebook, if you don't get episode 201, it's because Lyle and I joined the circus.
Yes, we went to a trapeze class today. And it was as fun as it looks.
As fun. We're both naturals.
Naturals and going to be professional circus performers starting next week.
Yeah.
So look for us on the circus circuit.
Yeah.
And if you don't ever hear from us again, it's find us on the circus train and ask
we'll
us our thoughts on
we'll
the
still
election.
We'll still be talking about politics.
We'll still be talking about politics. But if you want to do something more realistic, check out 201 when it comes out next week.
It will be on Tuesday next
It will be on Tuesday instead of Monday next week, so keep that in mind.
Yeah.
But we will speak to you next week.
Bye.